I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. After just 1 year, it's clear that President Trump has not just broken with President Obama's foreign policy. He has upended decades of relationships and agreements forged by previous presidents and administrations of both parties. That has left global leaders, foreign policy advisors, and much of the world unsure of this country's roles and responsibilities and what we are going to do next. Our guest, Michael Walzer, has written a book that I doubt President Trump will read. It's a collection of his articles from Dissent magazine, and it's titled A Foreign Policy for the Left. He says socialists and social democrats and left-leaning liberals are more comfortable with domestic policy and haven't gotten a firm enough handle on foreign policy or national security, which he calls a principled failure. He joins us on Radio Times to talk about what the left gets right and wrong when it comes to responding to international crises and how to create a coherent foreign policy that supports real democratic ideas and ideals. Michael Walzer is professor emeritus at the Institute for Advanced Study, retired co-editor of Dissent magazine, and he joins us from the studios of Princeton University. It's been a bunch of years. Michael Walzer, nice to have you with us. Radio Times.
I'm very glad to be here.
Nice to have you with us. So are you a socialist, a social democrat, a left-leaning liberal, or some combination of the above?
I've called myself a democratic socialist or a social democrat most of my life. I think those names are okay.
What does that mean to you, and how should we understand that?
Sorry.
That's okay.
On domestic policy, it means that we are committed to a more egalitarian society. We defend health care for all Americans, public education. We support unions. We argue against racism, against misogyny, against every form of discrimination. We defend voting rights. We want more democracy. On domestic politics, social democrats and democratic socialists do very well. On foreign policy, not so much. On issues of where the use of force is in question, where on issues of security, social security, we're very good about.
I hear you.
National security, not so much. We don't like to talk about those issues. You saw that most clearly in the Bernie Sanders campaign. Here was a man running as a democratic socialist for president of the United States, the global hegemon, the strongest power in the world, and he had nothing to say about foreign policy.
But do you think that is unique? And the world has always been a complicated place. It feels even more complicated today. The people meaning the American people, are just more comfortable dealing with issues within our own borders rather than trying to figure out what to do about the rest of the world.
Yes, certainly. But it's the task of politically engaged people and people aspiring to political leadership, like Bernie Sanders, to talk about America's engagement with the world, which, after all, is pretty important.
How would you then – what are the principles you think that should define, then, a foreign policy for the left?
Well – first of all, we have to learn the importance of the physical safety of our fellow citizens, because that's something that no American political activist or ambitious political leader can avoid. And we have generally not been committed. Let me give you an example.
Sure, go ahead.
The national security state of is a right wing creation. The Patriot Act, mass surveillance of the American population, a booming military budget, the militarization of the police, all that is the national security state, and it is the creation of the right, sometimes of the far right. And liberals and leftists have never offered an alternative to the national security state. And the reason for that is we don't recognize the importance of security. all through the 30s, left-wing parties, the socialists in France, the Labour Party in England, voted against the military budget, against rearmament in the face of Nazism. In 1939, Norman Thomas, the much-beloved leader of American socialism, Americans didn't vote for him, but they liked him. Norman Thomas wrote a book called Keep America Out of War, demanding a reduction in the military budget in 1939. All through the Cold War, many, many leftists were insisting that the Soviet Union was a peace-loving country that, led by Uncle Joe, a famous Democrat, which had a country that had no ideological or political ambitions, and the Cold War was America's fault. In the early years of Islamist radicalism, before Boko Haram began kidnapping schoolgirls and ISIS began beheading infidels, before that, many, many leftists were treating Islamist radicalism as if it was an anti-imperialist politics from which we had nothing to fear. Only the imperialists had something to fear. And therefore, in none of those cases were we willing to address security issues.
Well, let me pick up on several of those things. And I guess when you talk about the national security state and protecting the country, it's a question about the use of military and at what point does, and you wrote a book on just and unjust wars. Mm-hmm. You seem to be saying, at least from the left, an unwillingness to use the military and perhaps being naive about who our enemies are. Can you expand on that?
Naive is a weak description. We have often accepted the self-description of tyrants who call themselves leftists without even skepticism, starting with Stalin and Mao and Ho Chi Minh and extending to Hugo Chavez and there's a long list of third world dictators who call themselves leftists, and we mostly accept the description uncritically.
Let me quote.
Go ahead. Go on.
Well, let me quote you for our listeners from your book, and you write that that from a broadly speaking leftist point of view, everything that goes wrong in the world is America's fault. You say, in many ways, that is the kind of defining policy for many leftists. Do I have that right?
Well, there are yes, met for many leftists, not for all of us. And that's not the anti-Americanism or anti-imperialism, which generally come to the same thing, is one of the shortcuts of leftist politics. And what it means is that we're not talking to other leftists in the world. I mean, think of during the Cold War, many, many leftists opposed the formation of NATO, mm-hmm. And many leftists like Jeremy Corbyn in England have long been advocates of withdrawing their countries from NATO. And this is a politics that is pursued without ever thinking to talk to leftists in Poland, say, or Lithuania or Ukraine, who might have very different ideas about NATO. And I think talking to comrades abroad is one of the things that American leftists have very often failed to do.
What I'm also thinking, if you don't mind, I'll just jump right in here. You're up in Princeton, I'm down here in Philadelphia, so I cannot see you. But I'm also thinking that in certain ways, that idea that not everything that goes wrong in the world is America's fault, but certainly, as you well know and as you write, we have supported dictators in Central America and in Africa. We have supported authoritarian governments largely during the Cold War. We supported the overthrow of Mossadegh. So are leftists right to some degree?
Oh, yes. I mean, Yes, if you have a policy of opposing American engagements abroad, you're going to be right at least half the time and maybe more. I was deeply engaged in the struggle against the Vietnam War, which I thought was an unjust war. And I thought the more recent war in Iraq was both unnecessary and unjust. But it is very important to pursue a politics of distinction. The Korean War, I thought, was a justified war against an aggression from the North. I thought that the first Iraq War, the first Gulf War, against the conquest of Kuwait, was a justified engagement. And I think that with a lot of necessary criticism of the conduct of the war, the struggle against ISIS has probably been justified, especially at those moments, like the moment when we rescued the Yazidi heretics who were about to be slaughtered by ISIS militants. And it was very interesting that most leftists, I think, supported that rescue, though many of them would have voted against the military budget that made possible the rescue.
And is it because the wars that you say are just, that you think were correct, is about, in some degree, self-defense, and also there is a humanitarian aspect to them as well, rescuing people, for instance?
Yes, the war in Kosovo is an example of that. That was actually a left or a near left war. It was supported by a socialist government in France, a coalition of social democrats and greens in Germany, the democratic left in Italy, and a weak partner, but very important militarily, the Clinton administration. So that was a near-left war for humanitarian purposes, opposed by the farther left. I think wrongly opposed. I do believe that humanitarian intervention to stop a massacre is a justified use of military power. I would have supported an intervention. I would have hoped it would have been African troops, but with American logistic support in Darfur, for example.
You know what? Hold on.
So self-defense and the defense of others, both of these are legitimate reasons for war.
Let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation with Michael Walzer. He's a professor emeritus at the Institute for Advanced Study, retired co-editor of Dissent magazine, and his new book is a collection of articles from that magazine called A Foreign Policy for the Left. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Michael Walzer. He's in Princeton, New Jersey, I should say, at the studios of Princeton University, again talking about his new book. It's a collection of essays from Dissent magazine called A Foreign Policy for the Left. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY. Radio Times. Let me read a tweet from Nathan. He says Sanders did have foreign policy positions. In many ways, it overlapped with Trump's non-interventionist beliefs. That is a foreign policy, is it not, Professor Walzer?
Yes. Bernie gave one significant speech on foreign policy, and that was about Israel and Palestine. Since he's Jewish, he felt he had to do that. And no doubt Israel-Palestine is very, very important to Jews and Palestinians, but it is a tiny corner of the world, and he really did not have much to say about the rest. I can tell you a story.
Go ahead.
He was asked early on in his campaign to list his foreign policy advisors, and he listed me as one of them. We had had a 20-minute phone conversation about Syria 2 years before. That was the full extent of our collaboration. And so I knew that when he listed me as a foreign policy advisor, that he didn't have any foreign policy advisors, and he wasn't engaged with foreign policy.
Was there anyone else, or just you?
No, he listed three other people. I think none of them people that he was actually working with.
Well, let me ask you about the war in Syria, something that you write about in the book, and obviously a very complicated, tragic civil war and war of, it's even hard to describe exactly what's going on there, but we're watching a country essentially being destroyed. What would a leftist foreign policy be for Syria?
Right now, it's very hard to say. I think that our support for the Kurds in northern Syria is defensible, is justified. And now that they are under attack by the Turks, it's very important that we not walk away from them, since they were the most reliable fighters in our war against ISIS. From the beginning in Syria, we were in touch with people that we called the good guys. They were secular Democrats, liberals and leftists, and they asked for our support. We gave them very strong verbal support. We called for the downfall of the Assad regime. We insisted that the downfall was a necessary consequence of the uprising. And then we gave very half-assed support to these good guys. Now, maybe there weren't enough of them. Mm-hmm. Maybe CIA people in Syria were telling President Obama that these people could not win. But clearly, we either should have given them the support they asked for, or we should not have called for the downfall of the government they were opposing. We either should have stayed out on the grounds that the democratic opposition in Syria was too weak and didn't have the popular support that that would have made an intervention justified, or we should have intervened in a way that might have given them the popular support.
You know, I'm thinking of all the conflicts around the world, and I do not believe in the good old days. And clearly World War II was, you know, millions and millions of people died in that war, including lots of civilians as well as military casualties. But was it easier to be a leftist in the 20th century, to have a view of foreign policy that would ascribe to these democratic ideals than it is today?
Well, it was easier during the war against the Nazis. In the preceding period, I think most leftists got things very wrong. They were fighting the last war. They were against American intervention in World War I, which may have been a justified position, and they carried that over without realizing that Nazi Germany was something radically different from Kaiser's Germany. It took a long time for leftists to realize the Nazi threat and to support the necessary military response. But once the war began, yes, it was very easy then to be a leftist and a Democrat and supporting an American war.
You talk about, or I guess you quote someone, Paul Berman, on the politics of pretending. This was before, I guess, the actual start of World War II. But explain what the politics of pretending is and how we should understand that.
Well, in 1939, when many leftists supported the Munich agreements, we forget that fact. Many French socialists, for example, supported the agreement because they looked across the Rhine and just couldn't see what had happened in Nazi Germany, and pretended that this was a conventional regime with which it was not necessary to fight. That was the politics of pretending. Not everybody played that politics. Clement Attlee, the Labour Party leader, made a strong speech in Parliament opposing the Munich agreements, but he couldn't suggest an alternative policy since his party had voted against rearmament, and Britain was obviously not prepared to oppose Germany militarily at that point.
You had mentioned Darfur earlier, saying that intervention would have been justified there. And, you know, I'm thinking of, again, all these hot spots and conflicts around the world. I'm thinking about the Rohingya in Myanmar or Burma. We're watching in many ways not just massacres, but certainly the refugee crisis there in that part of the world. What would a leftist policy be for the Rohingya?
Well, very, very strong opposition to the policy of the government, and to the brutality of the army, and it's not easy to imagine a military intervention on behalf of the Rohingya. That would have to come from China or India, who neither country is prepared to do that. But there could be very much stronger diplomatic interventions, much stronger political support, and I think there has to be a massive humanitarian effort to help the refugees. That's true also for the refugees from Syria now in Jordan and Lebanon, living in awful conditions when promised international help has been meager. When there are, and there are going to be more of these massive refugee migrations, there has to be a very strong political, and that includes resourced, financial response. And that we see that the United States now has 100,000 refugees from Puerto Rico. They are American citizens, but they are climate refugees. Mm-hmm. And the government is not prepared to deal with this thing, with this kind of human suffering. And it is global now.
Well, indeed it is, although I have read stories about how the military, maybe separate from the Trump administration, but the military is actually making some kind of preparation for the effect of climate on foreign policy, perhaps even on conflicts and things like migration and refugee crises.
Yes, I think there are people in the American government, and maybe especially in the Pentagon, who do believe in climate change, and who are looking for ways of dealing with it, but this is going to require considerable allocation of resources the American government is not really contemplating that yet.
That is Michael Walzer, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. A couple of years ago, he wrote a book called Just and Unjust Wars. His new book, a collection of articles from some of his writing in Dissent magazine. He is retired co-editor of that magazine, and it's called A Foreign Policy for the Left. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read an email from Brendan from Bucks County. What is the guest's views on U.S. support for Saudi Arabia and Israel? Saudi Arabia is the number one supporter of terrorist groups in the region and export their far-right Wahhabi extremism around the world. Israel has basically become an apartheid state. And I should say that you do write about this, so certainly your position on Israel in this book.
Yes, I don't like America's engagement with Saudi Arabia. I can understand an alliance with Sunni moderates, but the Saudi government has, in fact, as your emailer says, has been supporting Sunni radicals, extremists, has been exporting a theology that has helped in creating an intellectual environment where ISIS and Al Qaeda can operate. I am very strongly opposed to the current policies of the government of Israel in the occupied territories, and I am opposed to American support for those policies. I don't like the version of leftism that denies to the Jews any right of self-determination, which is allowed to just about every other people, Vietnamese, and I would hope Kurds and others around the world. I am a statist. I believe very strongly that that the state is the necessary agent of protection and welfare in the world today, and that the Palestinians need a state, and so do the Jews. And so I am a two-stater in the Middle East, and I think that is the solution that leftists should be working for.
You have been critical of some parts of the boycott against Israel. You, I believe, boycott goods that come from settlements. This is where it gets complicated. But you write in this book that Israeli academics have played a major role in all organizations and movements opposing the occupation of the West Bank and other territories seized by Israel in the Six-Day War, basically saying that when you have a boycott, you do not engage with people in Israel who may believe what you believe if you're a leftist.
Right, right. I was against any kind of academic boycott of South Africa, although I supported economic boycotts. I think it is true around the world that the leaders of democratic oppositions are often centered in the universities, which are islands of freedom or relative freedom, even in authoritarian states. The Green Uprising in Iran had a lot of student and professor support. In China, the universities are a source of leftist of support, at least at the university I visited when I was in China, was full of people who were able on campus but not off campus to talk freely about politics. So the last place I would want to penalize for the politics of any country would be its universities.
Interesting. Let me read a tweet. This would be President Carter brilliantly avoided all questions of race, politics, imperialism, etc. by focusing on a policy of human rights. He was pilloried by both sides of the spectrum, but in retrospect, is this not the focus that best represents America's ideals? What do you say, Michael Walzer?
Yes, I do think that a public commitment to human rights by the American government is very important. But my book is about the foreign policy of the left, and the left consists of unions and parties and NGOs of all sorts, and even newspapers and magazines, and we should be the very strong supporters of human rights around the world, and that means that we should be working with, we should be in touch with activists defending human rights around the world. And often the government can't do that. I mean, the government has relations, say, with the government of Algeria. Our government has relations with the government of Algeria. There is a movement, a feminist movement in Algeria called Women Living Under Muslim Law, which argues for gender equality using Muslim texts when they can find them. That's an organization. The U.S. government can't do much for that organization, but the left can. We can help with public support, with political support, with financial support. We should be on the side of people like that around the world.
Are you saying then that President Carter was not, I'm using a, it's going to sound more pejorative than I mean it, was not a lefty when he based his foreign policy around this idea of human rights?
No, he was a good liberal, and it's mostly a good foreign policy. It's not clear how effective it can be, given all of the needs of international politics and the difficulties of dealing with sovereign states. The left has different kinds of opportunities and therefore different kinds of obligations.
We're almost up in a break here, and I just scribbled the word Obama, which I will ask you about after the break. But are you saying that when it comes to a foreign policy for the left, it's really for the more ground level left rather than trying to create or vote in a president who espouses these lefty ideas?
No. We are, as American citizens, we are engaged with American politics, and we will be critics of sometimes and supporters of sometimes American foreign policy. And of course, we will support candidates from the left. But we also have commitments as leftists to other leftists around the world.
That is Michael Walzer, our guest on Radio Times today. His new book is called A Foreign Policy for the Left. And again, it's from a number of the articles that he wrote for Dissent magazine. He's retired co-editor of Dissent, also professor emeritus at the Institute for Advanced Study, joining us from the studios of Princeton University. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. And again, I'm Marty Moskowitz talking with Michael Walzer at Princeton University Studios. We are talking about his new book, A Foreign Policy for the Left, talking about where the left has gotten foreign policy right and wrong, according to our guests. Also talking about the opportunities of a left-leaning foreign policy and how it could make the world a better place. Let me read an email from Fred. I think your guest makes a fatal mistake in lumping together all of these so-called left. They run the gamut from those who are socially liberal while being business conservatives and all the way to anarchists. He selectively has, for example, claimed that leftists did not see Hitler as a worldwide danger. Most leftists here did support universal opposition to Hitler. Can you respond to that, Michael Walzer?
Yes, he's certainly right. The left is a congeries of many, many groups. We are famous for our divisions. And I do try in the book to use the word we in quite specific ways, and often with a parenthetical, with a parenthesis, I try to define in each case what part of the left I am I'm talking about. I recognize there are great differences. Think of I mentioned Jeremy Corbyn in the Labour Party, who has been a longtime opponent of NATO, but throughout the years of his opposition, the Labour Party was in fact supporting NATO. Hmm. Whether it will do so if he ever becomes prime minister is unclear, but certainly there is quite radical divisions in the Labour Party and in the French Socialist Party on issues of foreign policy and security. So I accept that criticism. In the book, I try as best I can to distinguish who I'm talking about when.
Appreciate that comment. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. So let me ask you about President Obama. He talked about stupid wars. I don't know if that's just or unjust wars from your definition, but clearly not able to get out of Afghanistan, getting out of Iraq. But yeah, as we know, the situation in Iraq is pretty horrendous. He also used drones. And I'd just be curious about, as a person of the left, how you see the drone war.
Yes, drones are famous for their precision. And yet, we have killed many civilians with our drone attacks. And the reason for that isn't technological, it is political. Drone warfare is said to be risk-free, and indeed for the guy sitting in a hut in Nevada with all those machines in front of him, he is not at risk when he moves the drone or fires from the aircraft. But drone warfare is radically dependent upon information on the ground. Yeah. And gathering information on the ground is a dangerous activity. And we have often short-circuited that activity. We have relied on native informants who have agendas of their own, and we have killed people they wanted us to kill rather than the people we were trying to kill. Used rightly against legitimate targets, drones can be a much better way of fighting than sending in commandos who are likely to both take casualties and cause casualties, and certainly much better than aerial bombardment.
Has there been a just war from your perspective that became an unjust war because of the way it was fought?
Well, you might think of Vietnam that way, although I was against it from the beginning, but there was a case to be made for trying to create a government in Saigon that could rally the country against the communist North, because anyone who knew very much about the communist North knew that a victory for the Viet Cong and the North would mean an authoritarian and a brutal authoritarian regime in the South. But it quickly became apparent that the governments we were supporting in the South were corrupt and authoritarian themselves, and that they could not rally the people. And we found ourselves engaged in a war against the rural society of Vietnam. A war that was worse than anything that could follow a communist victory. So that might be an example. I think the Afghan war is an example of a war which began justly. I think it was justified for the United States to take military measures against the Taliban, who had provided a territorial base, not just moral support or political support, but a territorial base for al-Qaeda. But we did not pursue the war in a serious way. We relied on Afghan warlords. We did not allocate the resources necessary for political reconstruction after we thought the war was won. The American government was already focused on Iraq, and the current situation in Afghanistan is a direct result of the failures of our commitment at the beginning.
How do you see President Trump, especially when it comes to foreign policy? He does seem to be all over the place, and he has criticized our friends. He seems to have an affinity for authoritarian leaders. How do you see him?
All that sounds
all that.
Right.
And more?
and more. He is He's a master of what I think of as gestural politics. He intervenes in Syria with a one-time airstrike, missile strike, which might or might not have been justified, but there's no diplomatic or political follow-through. And it is radically ineffective, and that doesn't matter because he's proud of the moment when the missiles hit. His bluster about North Korea is, I hope, mostly bluster, but it is another example of thinking that that some radical gesture, some forceful gesture, is a substitute for a serious diplomatic and political policy. And I'm afraid that is the way we are now engaged in the world, to the astonishment and frightening. We are frightening our friends.
Are we frightening you? How dangerous do you think this is? He's on his way to Davos today, I should add.
Yes. In Davos, he won't do great damage to human life. Although he will defend bad policies, but yes, in North Korea, I think it's a very dangerous politics. Perhaps being undercut by the South Koreans, who are behaving very independently, and that's heartening. But you have examples of what we have done most recently in Syria, where we are apparently turning our backs on the Kurds who fought for us in the war against ISIS, and whom we armed and trained and helped, and now I don't know. The White House today virtually endorsed the Turkish attack, and the Pentagon insisted that it was still standing with the Kurds. So
kind of confusing,
American
isn't
foreign
it?
Policy is a mystery right now.
But I'm also thinking, and I mean, this has been said before about President Trump talking about the press as the enemy of the people, threatening to lock up Hillary Clinton, denigrating institutions like the FBI, the Justice Department. Do you see that as I mean, not as I get maybe the opposite of a leftist perspective or foreign policy?
This
or even
is,
domestic policy.
This is a frightening turn to the right, and it's not just the president's tweets and the president's speeches. It is what's going on in every agency of the government, where he has put people who have not only right wing but far right positions. And they are doing great damage to the welfare state, to the regulatory state, to precisely the state that defends the physical safety of American citizens.
But why do you think the right then does so much better than the left in the United States, at least in current times?
Yeah, well, we always hope for a turnaround, and there are some signs of it. I walked with in the Women's March in New York a couple of days ago, and that was heartening. And the fact that there are so many Americans duly engaged in local politics, which the left has certainly neglected, all that is heartening. But we have. We have failed in a variety of ways to sustain the kinds of connections with the American people that we had in the 1930s and in many ways in the 60s. And we have failed in part through the neoliberal economic policies of Democratic as well as Republican administrations, starting with Clinton and Bush and Obama. And I think, I think the failure began a long time ago. I I'll tell you another story.
Okay.
I was engaged, very actively engaged in the anti-war movement in the 60s. I was co-chair of a group called the Cambridge Neighborhood Committee on Vietnam, which was doing SDS-style community organizing against the war. We would go door-to-door and look for support and organize house meetings. And we also organized a referendum on the war in the city of Cambridge. And we got 40% of the vote against the war, which was not bad since American soldiers were still fighting in Vietnam. But we lost every working-class neighborhood in the city. Huh. We carried the Harvard end of the city. And a sociologist who did a survey of the vote came up with this striking conclusion. The higher the rent you paid, the greater the value of your home, the more likely you were to vote against the war.
Sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it?
Yes, it does sound familiar. If you think of here in Princeton, New Jersey, which is one of the richest towns in the United States, the vote was 8-1 for Hillary.
I'm looking at the clock here. Let me get Thomas from Newark, Delaware, to join us. Hi, Thomas. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah. How you doing?
Good.
I consider myself, if I have to label myself, a liberal with conservative views. And I was listening to your speaker when you mentioned just wars, et cetera. Now, I listened to another show of yours where they explained that in the Korean War, for example, the United States kind of like carpet bombed the whole country. And to me, that would seem to be part of the reason why the North Korean government is mistrusting of America. Now, I guess my question is, do liberals do enough to make people understand the damage that's being done in this war to, like, the civilian populations? Because to me, that's a big failing of the liberal movement.
Sure.
That they don't let people understand that, you know, there's a reason why North Korea doesn't like America, and it has nothing to do with them just being crazy.
Well, you know what, Thomas? Let me see what our guest has to say. Go ahead, Michael Walden.
Well, the Korean War was, in my view, a just war, but it was fought, as your interlocutor says, it was fought unjustly in many areas. There was an excessive use of air power and artillery. But, of course, the people who suffered most were people in South Korea, where most of the fighting went on, and they are now American allies. So there's no close correlation between the kind of war we fought and the support we have or don't have on the Korean Peninsula. But it is very, very important for leftists to engage not only with where we fight and when we fight, but also with how we fight. And the most recent example of that is the city of Mosul in Iraq, where we also carried out a very similar kind of bombing campaign when Iraqi troops encountered fire from an apartment building in front of them. They would simply call in an airstrike, and we would blow up the building and everyone in it, and the Iraqi troops would advance. And the result is a very high number of civilian casualties in Mosul, which we have not admitted, though the Associated Press sent reporters into the morgues of Mosul and came up with a number of 9,000 civilian dead. The Americans have admitted something like 300. We need to oppose that kind of policy. That should be an important part of left politics.
Well, I hate to end on that note. Michael Walzer, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And his book is A Foreign Policy for the Left. Also wrote a book a couple of years ago called Just and Unjust Wars. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.